It was dark when we got to Scotney Hall and all the windows were lit up. The front door was opened before we had time to ring the bell. We went into quite a little drawing room, where the Cottons were standing by the fireplace with two other people. They were a Mr. and Mrs. Fox Cotton, English relations of the Cottons, rather distant ones, I think. As soon as I heard the husband called Aubrey, I remembered that he's an architect. I read something about his work in a magazine once. There is something very elegant about him, and he has a beautiful speaking voice, though it is a bit affected. I was next to him while we were drinking our cocktails, so I asked him about the architecture of the house. He launched forth at once. "What makes it so perfect," he said, "is that it's a miniature great house. It has everything. Great hall, long gallery, central courtyard. I've hankered for it for years. Oh, how I wish I could persuade Simon to let me have it on a long lease." He said it as much for Simon to hear as for me. Simon laughed and said, "Not on your life." Then Mr. Foxcotton said, "Do tell me, the exquisite lady in grey, surely she's the topaz of McMorris's picture in the Tate Gallery?" And after we had talked about topaz for a minute or two, he drifted over to her. Soon after that, we went in to dinner. The table was a pool of candlelight, so bright that the rest of the room seemed almost black, with the faces of the family portraits floating in the darkness. I have an idea that Neil just may have asked for me to be next to him, because he told me I would be as we went in. It made me feel very warm towards him. It was a wonderful dinner with real champagne. Lovely, rather like a very good ginger ale without the ginger. When Mrs. Foxcotton spoke to Neil, I got a chance to look round the table. Both father and the vicar were listening to Mrs. Cotton. Aubrey Foxcotton was monopolizing topaz. For the moment, no one was talking to either Rose or Simon. I saw him look at her. She gave him a glance through her eyelashes, and though I know what topaz means about it being old-fashioned, it was certainly a most fetching glance. Perhaps Rose has got into better practice now. Anyway, I could see that Simon wasn't being put off by it this time. He raised his glass and looked at her across it almost as if he were drinking a toast to her. His eyes looked rather handsome above the glass, and I suddenly had a hope that she could really fall in love with him, in spite of the beard. But heavens, I couldn't. She smiled, the faintest flicker of a smile, and then turned and spoke to the vicar. I thought to myself, she's learning, because it would have been very obvious if she had looked at Simon any longer. The next minute, my left ear heard something which made my blood run cold. Mrs. Cotton was asking Father how long it was since he had published anything. "A good 12 years, he said in the blank voice which our family accept as the close of a conversation. It had no such effect on Mrs. Cotton. "You've thought it best to lie fallow," she said. Then she added briskly, "But it's been long enough, don't you think?" He just said very quietly, "I've given up writing, Mrs. Cotton. And now let's talk of something more interesting." "But this is interesting," she said. I sneaked a look at her. She was very upright, all deep blue velvet and pearls. "And I warn you, I'm quite unsnubbable, Mr. Mortmain. When a writer so potentially great as you keeps silent for so long, it's somebody's duty to find out the reason. Automatically, one's first guess is drink, but that's obviously not your trouble. There must be some psychological..." Just then, Neil spoke to me. "Quiet a minute," I whispered. But I missed the rest of Mrs. Cotton's speech. Father said, "Tell me, are you unique, or has the American club woman become more menacing since my day?" It seemed to me a terribly rude thing to say, even in fun, but Mrs. Cotton didn't appear to mind in the least. She just said smilingly, "I think we must cure you of this habit of generalizing about America on the strength of 2 short lecture tours." Serve Father right. He's always talked as if he had brought America home in his trouser pocket. Naturally, I wanted to go on listening. But I saw Mrs. Cotton notice me, so I turned quickly to Neil. All right now, I said. What was it? He asked. Did you think you'd broken a tooth? I laughed and told him what I had been listening to. You just wait, he said. She'll have him turning out masterpieces 8 hours a day, unless, of course, he goes for her with a cake knife. I stared at him in amazement. He went on. Oh, she had our attorney send us all the details of the case. Made me laugh a lot. But I guess she was a bit disappointed that it wasn't a real attempt at murder.